in 16 years, you preach through a lot of passages, but rarely do you preach through anything twice. We began again going through Romans on Sunday mornings to go through a second time. We went through Revelation a second time by request from those who weren't able to come on Wednesday nights. This is going to be the second time that I have preached from Proverbs chapter 31 in 16 years. And I was trying to figure out, I think it was 12 years ago that we looked at it the first time. So it's been a while. And we know it because, well, in some churches, it's kind of like Easter, a resurrection message that you expect to hear, and you hear it annually. If you've been in other churches, you might have heard it repeatedly Sunday after or Mother's Day after Mother's Day. As we come to it and we look at this, this is the instructions of a mother to a son. This is the instructions of a mother whose son is a king on what kind of woman to look for, what kind of wife to look for, the kind of person that will make him great. And so when we consider this morning, particularly verses 10 down through verse 31, and it's very much a song. In Hebrew, it's called an acrostic. It's kind of like you would sing a song. A is for apple, and you go through and the kids would learn a rhyme. This does the same thing, only it uses the Hebrew alphabet. For each line uses, in repeated order, the alphabet of the Hebrew vocabulary. So each one of them, it would be a way for, not only for this king to remember this, but for any child, because how do we learn things? Repetition, and if you can put it to a song, to something that you sing, how much easier is it to learn? I remember when we were doing when we had the daycare and doing a chapel with the daycare kids that were here in the nursery. One of the songs I sing with them went like this. 1, 2, 3, Jesus loves me. 1, 2, Jesus loves you. 3 and 4, he loves you more than you've ever been loved before. 5, 6, 7, we're going to heaven. 8, 9, glory divine. Now we've made it up to 10, let's go back and start again. Now, it's been years since I've sang that. But why can I remember it? Because it's mnemonic. It's to a tune. It's to something that you would hear. And so for a young man to grow up and hear his mom sing this proverb in a way that would be memorable. Now, if I did it to you in Hebrew, it wouldn't be memorable at all. It'd probably sound quite awful. But it was for someone who grew up with that. It would be something that they would sing, and as a young man was looking for a wife, then he would consider the things that this mother of King Lemuel had advised him of. But not just her. Because as you go through the book of Proverbs, you find these instructions that are given to the son. And there are two kinds of women that the son is introduced to throughout the book of Proverbs. The first is the woman wisdom. And the woman wisdom, the kind of person that you should seek after. Chapter 1, verses 20 to 33, or chapter 8, verses 1 to 36, or chapter 9, verses 1 to 6. The good wife corresponds to wisdom. And so to find a good wife is a wise thing to do. Looking for the kind of person that you marry in character rather than what you see. Because you can glamour, you can dress a lot of things up, can't you? In construction, paint covers a lot of things, doesn't it? Put up some trim and you can make a bad sheetrock job where they've done a poor job on the corners. You can cover it up and you never even know. There's a lot of things you can cover up. And so it is with a woman as well. Because how many of you spend too much time in front of a mirror in preparation to go out into the world and don't take care of the things that are weightier. And it is that important. On Sunday nights, we are in 1 Peter. And as you recall, the last two Sunday nights, one Sunday night two weeks ago, it was addressed to the wife, and then last Sunday night was addressed to the men. Because homes and the values that we hold here aren't the values that are outside of the door. The things that you learn here are not what you're going to hear outside of there. And even young ladies growing up in church, though you hear it here and know it here, too oftentimes when we leave the doors and we leave our mom and dad, we forget everything that we have ever been taught. And the testimony will be that I grew up in an evangelical church, or I grew up in a Southern Baptist church, and now you look at my life and it is a far cry, it is far distant from what I had learned and what I had been taught. And so it is that important for the kind of person. Well, there's also woman folly. And she corresponds to quarrelsome and the unfaithful wife, chapter 9, verses 13 to 18. And so as we look at this, it's the kind of person that God designed for Adam when he made Eve. She was fitting. She was an Azer. She helped him. She corresponded to him. She fit with him. And the union between the two of them was to be appropriate as God designed. And so when we look at beginning of verse 10 of chapter 31, we read these words, "A woman of valor who can find." And when we look at this, sometimes they say strength and other things, but he's looking at character. A woman with character, a woman that is deeply solid, that goes beyond the superficial, what's on the outside. Who can find? For her price, her value, if you could go out and buy it, it is far distant, it is way surpassing even rubies. Her husband, the heart of her husband, trusts in her. And spoils she does not lack. She renders to him good and not evil all the days of his life. She seeks for wool and flax, and from these, by the delight, makes things from the delight of her hands. And she is as a merchant ship that brings her bread from distant lands. She rises up while it's still night, and she gives nourishment to her household. She even has portions for her servant girls. She considers a field, and she acquires it. And from her earnings, and by the work of her hands, she plants a vineyard. She's girded with, her loins are girded with strength, and her arms are strong. She tastes from her commerce that which is good, and it is not quenched, the lamp is not quenched at night. Her hands, they go out to the distaff, and the palms of her hand, they grasp the spindle. Yet her hands, they are spread out, they're open to the poor. And to the hands, she sends them out to the needy. She does not fear for her household when the snow comes at winter. For all of her house, they are clothed with scarlet. She makes coverings for it, from linen and from purple, for clothing. She is known, her husband is known in the gates, as he takes his seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen, and she sells it, and belts she gives to those who are traders. Strength and splendor are her clothing, and she laughs at the days that are yet to come. Her mouth is open for wisdom, and the law of covenant faithfulness, or loyal love, is upon her tongue. She keeps watch in the going out of her household, and the bread of a sluggard she does not eat. Her children rise up and they bless her. Her husband, he praises her. Many daughters have done well. Same word that was in verse 10. But you excelled them all. Grace or charm, it's deceptive. Beauty, it's a vapor. But the woman who fears the Lord, she is to be praised. Give her the fruit of her hands and praise her in the gates because of her deeds. We look at this and it begins and it ends with her family, with her husband, and with the relationship that she has with her husband. Verses 10, verses 11 and 12 looks at her value of a good wife and the value, the benefit that she brings to her husband. And it ends in verses 28 and 29, and then again 30 and 31. Her husband, her children are praising her, and the high value of a good wife. And it all comes to focus in the very middle in verse 23, where it talks about the public respect that she gives to her husband. Everything focuses on that. You do realize that. You know, how oftentimes do wives, do women feel like they're kind of in the background? They're kind of like, I don't know, I was watching a commercial and the son and the husband, they get up to go to the kitchen because it's halftime, or it's a break in the athletic game. And while they have gone to the kitchen, the wife and the daughter have sat down on the couch, and they have some romance movie going on. And the husband and son come back, and they're looking at the TV and looking at the ladies. And the son looks at the dad and says, "You know, we're just background music. You know, we're just background." Well, how oftentimes is the wife just the background? She's in the background. She's not the one that's out in the front, not the one that's flaunting, but rather the one that is the one that's in the background. The one that's busy and does so much and yet receives and doesn't ask for anything in return. When you look for a wife, for a young man, well, I look around this room. I got one over here, and I've got one back there in the sound booth that's still looking, maybe a few years out. I've got one here that will be looking in the future as well. I've got another one back here that may be looking. When you look for a wife, what kind of woman should you be looking for? And young ladies, when you're thinking about the kind of man, what kind of person that you would like to marry, what should be the qualifications? Well, before you work on him, work on you. Work on what kind of person you are. And again, I go back to 1 Peter chapter 3, where it says it's not outward adornment, the braiding of hair and the cosmetics of what they wear and their garments and their clothing, but it's the hidden person of the heart. So one that's deeply inside of who really they are, on the kind of person. Now, every mother will be praised by her children today, every one of them. But all mothers qualify for this person. Not all mothers. You do understand that. And not all husbands are going to qualify for the good son. Either are they. And the reality is we know that. It's an unfortunate thing because in America we have seemed to have got the idea, or at least given the impression, that all it takes to go to heaven is to die. Isn't it? Because it doesn't matter what we've done in life and how we've lived or what we've done with our life. When we have the eulogy and when we have the message, it seems like everybody's going to go there. The only requirement is for us to die, and then when we die, we all go to heaven. But that's not the case, is it? And it is a matter of what we do with Christ and the choices that we make as we live for Christ, whether we go to heaven. And it is the kind of life that the mother, that the wife lives, that qualifies her to be a woman of virtue, a woman of valor, who has high and good qualities and character. If you're watching TV, you won't find that. This lady will not be held up, and she will not be on the cover of People magazine or any other glamour. She's not going to be your actress and movie star. She's not going to be the one that's on TV and is in the commercials. This is going to be the one that's going to be overlooked, that our culture and society will put no value on, not little value, no value at all. And they will look at you with disdain and say, "Why have you wasted so much when you had so much potential?" And when all they really are looking at is on the outside. Like you consider to find this. If you're finding something, you have to be what? Looking for it. You've got to be looking for this kind of a person. We're on Genesis on Wednesday evenings. And we're looking at Rebecca and the wife for Isaac. And Isaac marries Rebecca sight unseen. He doesn't pick out his wife. In fact, a very wise man in the house of Abraham picks her out for him. Because Abraham sends his oldest and most wise and trusted servant, the one that's over everything in his house, the one that marshals, that is in charge of everything, to go find a wife for Isaac. And he doesn't look at her beauty. He says to God, he makes a covenant with God, and he says, "God, the one that when I ask her for a drink, not only gives me a drink, but waters all my camels too. The one that goes beyond." So when Rebecca gets to the well, what's she do? He asks her for a drink. She gives him a drink, and she goes, "Let me water your camels as well." And she waters them until they are all full. And then the servant, in fact, that's all he's ever called, is the servant. The servant then gives her the rings and the bracelets and realizes that God has answered his prayer. You see, Rebecca wasn't chosen for her outward beauty, and yet we find that Jacob, when he chooses his wife, what's he choose her for? For what he sees. And the one that was a pie carriager, Leah, wasn't chosen for that. In fact, she's called cow-eyed. Something about her eyes, they were big or whatever, but he considers her to be cow-eyed. And so he looks on the outside, and what's he get? He gets trouble. Instead of looking on the inside, and what's he get with Leah? Not only the blessing of the Lord and all the children that come with that, but also God's blessing, God's riches and reward. You see, we look sometimes at the wrong thing. Genesis is very much in the heart looking at this passage. Because in verse 12, he reminds us that she does not render to her husband. She doesn't pay him back evil, but rather good. And there's a tree in the garden. You remember the tree in the garden in chapter 2 of Genesis? The tree in the garden that God placed in there in the garden was called the tree of what? The knowledge of good and evil. Tov and Ra. Not bad in the sense of morally bad, but it's not appropriate. It doesn't fit. And not good in the sense of moral goodness, but rather that it is appropriate, that it is exactly what is needed. She doesn't render to him evil. She doesn't render to him that which is bad, that's inappropriate. They function, that everything she does is fitting, and it's to his benefit and to the benefit of her family, everything. And not just momentarily, but it says the whole length of her life, all of the days of her life. It's one thing for a husband to trust in his wife and to look to his wife, but there's something deeper about this husband towards his wife than it just seems to be on the surface. Where does he trust her? In his knowledge, just what he knows about her? No. It says his heart, trust in his wife. She has him, heart and soul. She, this kind of a woman, this kind of a lady that he has found, that there's no way to put a value, a price on. Now, lots of things have changed. Daughters are not given a dowry that the husband buys the wife. There were times when the husband, when he wanted a wife, then he had to purchase his wife. He paid her father some sum of money or some object, and it was a reward that he would get for giving his daughter away. I think it changed, and there was a period of time where the wife had to pay the husband a dowry, and it went with her, and it was hers, but it went along with her. And the picture is here that if you were to have to pay for her, you couldn't afford her. If you had to pay for what her real value was, it's beyond your ability to buy this kind of a wife. To pay her father, to pay her family, you couldn't afford her. She is far too great. And when we consider the character, she's not only a blessing to her husband and a blessing to her children, a blessing to the servants, a blessing to the poor and to the needy, but she's a blessing to her parents. That in verse 29, it says that there are many daughters who have good character, that have this moral virtue, this valor about them. But this one, to her parents. It says many daughters. Well, a daughter is in relationship to what? To parents, to her mom and dad. So as this kind of a person, as they look at their daughters, they look at their children, this daughter exceeds them all. They have made her parents proud. They brought to them a great joy, a great rejoicing at the kind of person that she is and the kind of person that she has been. She's not lazy. How many times as a pastor over the years that I've been in the ministry have I gone to somebody's home and I knock on the door and I wondered if I was at the salvage yard or if I was at a home? I've got a cousin you never visited her. In fact, probably couldn't visit her today. You'd have to stand outside because the house is paths. And she's got two big dogs that live in the house with them. And so you kind of go down this path and kind of have to make your way through the house and had four daughters. And that's how the house was. No pride, no joy. In fact, I'm not sure what she does with her time. And again, I use my family. I always use my family. I don't use you or your family. But the reality is she's not lazy. This lady is not lazy. She's constantly doing something. She's constantly bettering her family because of her virtue, because of her character. She's the kind of person that is always doing something, always at work. And as it describes her, you know, she's taken her family from subsistence farming to manufacturing. She's gone from just providing from hand to mouth, from providing week to week, that she's benefited the whole house. She's benefited the family by the things that she does. She's very industrious. She's not afraid. How many times have we stepped back and thought, well, I don't know if I can do that? Not her. She doesn't worry about what's coming ahead. She's not worried about what the future is going to bring. I've heard it in this congregation. Well, I don't know what's going to happen to the, you know, in the future. You know, I don't know what, you know, if it just keeps getting worse, you know, it is getting worse. And it's not going to get any better because men are not getting any better. The only thing that will better a person is faith in Jesus Christ. Morally, we aren't going to be any better. And so if we sit back and bemoan, well, it's a wicked world and I wouldn't want to bring children into this world. Well, you know what? If you bring them in, you're responsible for them. You're responsible for how you train them. You're responsible for how you raise them up. You're responsible for what kind of people they're going to be. You've got to invest yourself if you're going to have kids. You've got to invest yourself on what you're going to invest in them. She's not afraid. She's not worried about what the future is going to bring because she knows what she's invested. And if the economy falls, you know, 2008, everybody, and what was it with the fall of the stock market back in the 30s? You know, people, what are we going to do? You know, the struggle and just, and I remember doing a funeral a few years back. The lady had a childhood disease. I'm not sure that it was polio, but she had a childhood disease and her mom went and sent her to school because in those days you didn't send the kids to school. So she was raised by her grandmother way out in the sticks in East Texas. And then the Great Depression came and she had two boys and her husband. Instead of staying and working and trying to figure out how in the world to make ends meet with the family and provide for his family, ran off and left them and left her in the midst of a hardship to raise two kids. And she did. You know, I think back of the funerals that I've done and some of the amazing people that I've had a chance to know some of them after they've died, to listen to the stories and to write down things about them. This lady made clothes for kids out of feed sacks. You know, back before it was popular in the 70s, she was making clothes for kids out of feed sacks. And when it was popular to put the red stitching down the side of blue jeans and have the stitching on the outside, when she saw what the style was and her kids liked that, she figured out how to put the stitching on the outside, and she's making clothes that her kids were Clyde and Beau, and they were from feed sacks. And she had a brother that, when he would wear something out or it got too small or he bought something new, he'd give it to her and she'd remake it. And she'd make clothes and things for her kids. I didn't know this woman except the testimony about her. I never met this lady. But you know what? The testimony of her life continued after she died. And the stories that her kids and her grandkids told of her still tell the story. You do realize that. When you look at this woman, the kind of person that ought to be held up and seen as exemplary, that's the kind of person they are. And they work. And they're constantly doing something. They aren't at rest. And they are a profit to their whole family. They benefit their whole family. But they go beyond. In fact, it says in verse 13 that the work that she does, she delights in it. She enjoys it. She likes working. She enjoys the things that she does. Idleness isn't in her vocabulary. It's not in her character. While it's still dark, she's up not only providing food for her own children, for her own house, but when the servants come. In fact, she's been so industrious, now she's got hired hands to come and work. When they come to the house, she provides for them as well. Everything that she does, she is constantly looking beyond herself, looking beyond today. And she has given herself over to that. In fact, in verse 18, again, it reminds, it says that from her commerce, she tastes that which is good. God has blessed her with the very blessing that he promised from the very beginning. God has rewarded her soul. And she's constantly at work. But one of the things that I think I like mostly about her isn't that she just provides for her family. Because it's easy to do that, isn't it? It's easy to care for our kids and for our grandkids. It's easy to care for one another. For those that are ours, look at verse 20. If her hand in verse 19 stretches out to grab the spindle and to work it in making thread and fabric, her hand also goes out. And it says the hand is spread out. It's open. She's not closed fist. People come by and need something. Her hand's open. She's gracious. She's giving. She's very kind. That's the kind of person that is exalted as exemplary for a young man to find. And her hand goes out to the poor. They come by. She gives them something to eat. I remember my grandmother in Arkansas. They were poor people. I came from a poor family. Both my mom and dad grew. I didn't know this. I always thought mom was the hillbilly and the hick. My dad was too. I just didn't know it. You think Indiana can't be hillbillies and hicks. But both of them grew up, and both of them grew up on farms. Mom in sharecropping, and my dad, well, his family, they were the foremen on a farm. They just worked on the farm. They didn't own the farm. And they grew up very poor, both of them. But I remember as a kid, it didn't matter which side of my family it was, because grandma, there were 10 kids, and my mom, my dad's side, there were only 3. But grandma, there were 10 of them, and there were 16 with my grandfather, and there were 16 with my grandmother's side. There were lots of family. People always came by. Some came by and stayed way too long. Literally, you know, they'd show up, and a month later, it's kind of like, you know, mama go down and tell them it's time you kick them out the door. You know, they stayed here way too long. The vacation's over. But grandma always had food. And they lived so far out in the country that if a car pulled in, if it wasn't purposely at their house, they were lost. It was down a gravel road and it was out in nowhere. And if somebody stopped by asking directions or trying to find something, before they left, grandma either had them a plate of beans with cornbread or biscuits that were left over that morning, or she had a pie chest in the kitchen. Oh my goodness, when we get to their house, only a 4-room house, didn't even have a bathroom. When we get to the house, the first thing we do is go straight through the door into the kitchen and look in the pie safe to see what kind of pie she had in there. And so somebody stopped by and they, you know, asked directions, and they either got a piece of pie, they got a meal, whatever they had. Grandma was always cooking. You know, we need those examples. Our kids need to see us being hospitable. And Peter said that, didn't he? Chapter 4, that we are to be hospitable. We're to show kindness and love towards strangers. So this just isn't Proverbs in the Old Testament. This is us. This is the kind of people we're supposed to be. Not just our wives, but this kind of people we're all supposed to be. And that the way we live is exemplary that those that are around us see our character. Not what we say, but they see our character. They see what we do. And then it brings with it honor. It brings honor because in verse 23, her husband is respected in the gate. It says, her husband is known in the gate. He sits with the elders of the land. Because of the kind of life that he has lived, that she has lived, the family has lived, they are respected and honored, and they get a sit to make the decisions of the city council. They are there. They didn't get elected in. They're recognized to be leaders and people you can look up to and trust. And so people look up to them. And the question is do those that know us, whether at work or whether in our neighborhood, do they look up to us? You know, do they know that that your house is a house of peace? I recall that a couple years ago, that one of my neighbors, a couple doors down, had witnessed a hit and run. And so she had given information to the police, and she had come home, and the two police cars pulled up at the house. And we didn't know this, but she had told her son, and then the neighborhood kids too, that if there was ever a problem, run to the Sigmund's house. Go to the house on the corner. And so the kids showed up at our house. It was supper time. Francis had cooked spaghetti or something. And they knock on the door. And so they come in because her mom told them if there's ever a problem, and they saw the police cars in front of the house as being a problem, that they're supposed to come to our house. Well, their son came, but also his friends came. And so we're eating, and so my wife puts out plates, and she didn't know I was going to say this, but she puts out plates, and so now we don't just have us sitting down to eat, but we've got Avery, and we've also got the plant boy, you know, and also Jada, and they're sitting at the table, and they're eating with us. And all they're doing is ask her information about what she saw at the accident. But the lights and the police cars run to the Sigmund's house. We didn't know our house was designated in the neighborhood as being the house, a safe house, one that you go to. But it is. And it still is. Reality is that to be known among your neighbors, to be known among the community. This kind of person, she is blessed by her family. Verse 28, her children, they rise up, they stand to bless her. That's a characteristic that is totally lost in our culture entirely. The children would get up to recognize or to honor anyone. But her kids, when she comes in, they stand up and they bless their mom. They show great respect, great dignity towards their mom. You know, I can't remember ever a time that it wasn't part of our heritage growing up, of our training growing up, that if a woman is in a room, comes into a room, no matter what her age is, if a woman comes into the room and there's no chairs for them to sit down in, what do? You get up. Monday, I didn't know it, but my driver's license ran out Monday. It runs out on your birthday. So it ran out Monday, and when I went by the bank, the lady goes, you know, your driver's license expires today. And I said, no, I didn't know that. I got to spend 3 hours down here at Port Arthur. I was told later you go to Orange, but I didn't know that. So I spent 3 hours in Port Arthur, and there aren't that many chairs. So I spent most of the day standing up. And it was up and down and up and down. Finally, I just said, I'm just standing up, because there aren't that many chairs. And with all the people that coming in, there were moms with little kids. There were old ladies, old men. What do? You do exactly what it says in verse 28. You don't do it because someone says, can I have that chair? When people come in that deserve respect, you rise and you show it. And if we do it to others, should we not do it to our own mother? Should we not bless her who has given us everything? And when you consider all that this lady has given to her family, she has given them much. They're distinguished in the whole community. It says her husband praises her. Her husband speaks well of her. We had a deacon and his wife at our church in Dallas. And they would always invite us over at Easter because we didn't have any family in Dallas, and loved them to death. But Rex and Carol, Rex always talked down to Carol. He treated her like she was stupid. She wasn't. In fact, when they moved away from Dallas, she got a job working at a bank, and she moved up in that quite well. I don't think they hire stupid people to deal with money and accounting. She wasn't stupid, but he treated her like that, and he always did it in front of people. It was uncomfortable. You know, nice couple. We loved them. They were dear friends. But it just was uncomfortable to hear him demean his wife always. At church, he demeaned her, and at the home, he demeaned her, and he always talked down as though she was some kind of an idiot. When the reality is the only one that was an idiot was Rex for talking down to her and treating her such. This lady's husband praises her. He speaks well of her. Her parents speak well of her. Her children speak well of her. And she receives her reward. But the reality of it all is that it's not just because she's a workaholic. There's something deeper to it than just what you see on the outside. It's not just because she was a stout and sturdy woman. It's beyond that. Verse 30 reminds us that the things that are outward, beauty and charm or grace, they're empty, they're deceptive, they're a vapor. You can't hang on to them. They disappear very quickly. But a woman who fears the Lord, a woman who fears God, who puts Christ first in her life, she's the kind of woman who will be praised. Because if she puts Christ first in her life, then these are the kinds of things that will exemplify her. Someone says, well, I've trusted Christ, but I don't live like that, and I don't plan on living like that. The problem may be in some of the choices. Because Christ doesn't call us to slothfulness, does he? 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 reminds us, if you won't work, then neither do you eat. That the two go together. That there is responsibility that comes with living. And if we're to honor Christ, then we have to honor Christ not just in our words, but we have to honor Christ in the way we live too. And so she does. She's industrious at everything, and she is praised from God, not only from her family, not only from her husband, not only from her children, not only from her parents, not only from the community as they bless her husband because of the kind of wife that he has chosen. She is blessed and honored by God. And God will give her the fruit of her hands. And she will be praised for the things that she has done. Some want praise. They want respect. They want all of this stuff, but they don't want to do the hard work that it takes to get there. And I go back to some of our local pastors just as an example. So many times I get told, well, I wish I could preach from the Hebrew, or I wish I could preach from the Greek. But you know what? If they went to seminary and they have a master's degree, they had to take those classes just like I did. The difference is what you do with what you get. Just because you take the class, how many classes have we taken that we've done nothing with? How many certifications do we have for things that we've taken classes to learn about that we've never done anything with at all? And the difference is what we do with it. It's what we do with it. Do we, with the talents and with the gifts that God gives us, do we invest them so as to get the reward that God would honor and that would bring respect to our Lord? This woman's invested well with the things that God's given her, first and foremost, to the family and to her own house, and then to those that are outside, to strangers, to those that are weak and poor and haven't made the best choices in life. And then in all that she has done with her servants and everything, she has brought honor to her family. She has brought honor to God. That's the kind of woman that's to be praised. Father God, we thank you. We thank you, God, that you, at the end of a letter, not at the first, have given us the final thing that we should reflect and think about. You began that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of understanding and of wisdom. God, we know that that's where it begins. But you end with the effects. What it ought to produce in us. What we ought to see if that's really true about us. It's one thing to say, I fear you, O Lord. I honor God. I respect God. But God, if it's not seen in our life, then it doesn't mean anything at all. God, help our confession not to be empty, hollow talk. But God, may it change the way that we think, the way that we live, the way that we act, the way that we live around others that are around us. God, as we saw in 1 Peter, to be reminded that the behavior that we live among those that we know the best can be the very means and the very source of their salvation as they see our godly behavior, as they see and watch and observe, that God, you use that as a means to convict them and to draw them to yourself. So this morning as we stand, God, may we reevaluate and reconsider our own lives and repent.